Well, obviously, I'm concerned. It's been a week of this plus. Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. I'm still here. Well, just on that, you know, I mentioned before, I got this letter from the state. Said, you know, here is a petition to the court. I read it and I said, okay, I can't sign this because. You know, the issue we had is I contended the amounts were wrong because they aggressively went to seize assets from my account, which was uncomfortable. So I also then requested, since you're doing this, well, you know, you're overcharging me. And what happened was they went and said, okay, given one set of data, was the calculation correct? And so there was that court hearing, and that's the only issue they addressed, and that was not in question. And what I'm seeing after I got this and I read through it again, it's effectively the same thing, but it's a different question. Because now what they've talked about is apparently adding Glory Jane to the emancipated list. And, you know, I didn't have that. That wasn't an issue. But, okay, the implication would be that Glory Jane has or will, I don't know, just my daughter, graduate from high school and therefore be emancipated, apparently. And if that is indeed true, then the amount goes down even further. And you have to go to court for this? But see, what they've done is it's the moving the goalpost idea. Because I wasn't after any of this. Now they're bringing this stuff up. And what is this going to do? Well, okay, what I will do, because I had to think it through, is I have to send, again, an updated appeal, restate my claims, you know, because, again, there's a violation of the law. Direct violation of the law. One, obviously the obvious, because there's the direct evidence in the return postcards. This is censoring the mail, which is exactly what my wife signed. The document said she cannot do, and obviously she's done it. So there's that issue. There's also, I have the right to talk to my kids. And now, you know, we're at voicemail 1712. That's a lot of voicemails that would imply that maybe indeed I have not been allowed to talk to my kids. So we have two major issues on the table. It has nothing to do with money. It's not addressed. Because the ability for me to communicate with my kids is what is the whole purpose of these voicemails is being thwarted. And the focus is money, which I will contend, Mr. Cross, specifically, because you have stated such, roughly. You know, when we talk about the serving cannot serve God and money, and you talk about the practicality of this, you're taking the practicality aspect. Yeah, I need money to eat. So take my money. No communications. Use the state as your hammer against me. Don't communicate with me. Don't pursue what God commands. Love. Reconciliation. Don't pursue that. Don't go there. No, can't do that. Because our God is a state, right? Not for me. I'm sorry. My God is the Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm going to pursue unwaveringly reconciliation. Unwaveringly reconciliation. That's why you have this unmitigated hope idea in the Promise website. But so we have the two issues, the lack of communications, the lack of ability for me to communicate with my kids, the censored post-it mail and so forth. And then we have the money aspect. And as I've pointed out, the money aspect is it's been way excessive. And, you know, it is ironic that my wife doesn't provide information and I did. Well, yes, I did. And that cost me. And she still doesn't provide information, which I find more than interesting. But so now that the state has given me this, there is a lesser amount. You know, I said it's not 8088, it's 486. Now with this change, it'll drop even more. I don't know how much, but I'll do that calculation and submit that. So with all that in mind, this is not helping my wife at all, is it? You know, monetarily wise. But even more, I really think one of the big issues I have in my mind, one of the big concerns, I talked about it, a great tragedy, or that may not be the words, that we may be facing when one or more of my kids say, as I quote Robert Hoagland, "Dad, where were you?" "I was there. I was fighting as hard as I could." What happens with my kids? And they look and they say, "Well, my mom, my grandfather and whatnot, they're not following Christ. They're showing no love. Here's my dad striving to reconcile, striving to point us to Christ. And my parent, my mom and my granddaddy says, nah, money is our God. Don't listen to your dad. That's what the Bible says. Don't do that." Well, why would they listen to the Bible? You're not setting a model of somebody who follows it. So why would they do that? Or it's, you know, I don't know how many years it'll be, but mom, for over 10 years, you, not my dad, but you, my mom, denied my dad from me. When George said, "I wish we were family again," what happens if some of the other kids say that? What will my wife and my father-in-law say to them? "Well, you can't deal with him because he keeps pointing to the Bible. He's wrong, obviously. And because he doesn't bring home enough money because of..." Oh, we don't want to go there. So let's not bring up the question. Let's not go there. It really concerns me what may transpire. And the most important person here, for me personally, is what happens to my wife. What happens to my wife if she's confronted with that? Maybe she's being confronted with that daily somehow. I love that lady. I'm trying to protect that lady. And I'm afraid she's self-destructing. The woman I love, I'm really concerned about. And I don't know what to do. What I do know is not to lie. But a trivia thing, I did just check just before I called. I'm well over 200,000 attempts to break into Kozlowski.org. So that's continuing. Why? I don't know. I don't know. I did mention yesterday that in an email I asked Chris about the question about slavery. Why do I feel a concern about that? Just like I feel a concern about the pro-life things and you know, it's the black-white thing. Why is my heart turned to that? Whereas I don't have this strong desire to feed the hungry. I mean, it's a big deal. But guess what? I had a visitor today, Chris, and we talked about that a little bit. And it is, you know, I think the bottom line was simply each is called for a particular purpose. You know, and In a way, feeding the hungry, there's no controversy in that. Protecting the sex slave? Well, there might be. You know, I mean, so, yeah. But anyway, we did have a brief review on that because he came over. We did share a meal and we took a hike. We did not go to Buzzard Point. We did go to Johnson Woods, which has kind of, there's a little damper there, but we did about 7 miles. So anyway, great conversation. It was delightful. It was delightful. I'm grateful to have that Chris as my friend. I'm grateful that we spend time together. The biggest heartache about the whole thing in our relationship is that we get together, Chris and I, but we don't get together, Chris and his family, his wife and his family, and me, my wife and my family, we don't get together all together. That would be fantastic. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen. But one other thing, because I don't want to get long. Yesterday, I left you with a couple links because I found it fascinating. One was Who Blew Up the Nord Stream Pipeline? A mystery. So I have the link there again because I have a copy of it locally. So you have it there to look at. And I thought it was well done. There is the section at... because I double-checked at 4 minutes and 54 seconds, where there was a clip from a gentleman, Jeffrey Sachs. And he said, well, I think, you know, the U.S., the evidence is the U.S. did it. And that, but see, what they did is that happened. And what I did is the program it happened on, which is a two-hour-long program. I didn't watch the whole thing. I just went straight to that section. They clipped it in such a way that made it a little bit more dramatic in the A Mystery video. So they showed the truth, which is true. But, you know, because they added the little sound and so forth, and... The interviewer, the way those things were put, the editing of that amplified the because when you watch the whole thing, and I'll clip it out and give you that raw section, you will see that it is not quite it's emphasized in this one video. However, what they're showing is true. He did indeed say the U.S. did it. That's the likely thing. And the host said, what? But again, it was edited to emphasize that. And I find that interesting. You know, but see, there's an issue because I'm vaguely familiar with the guy because he is a bit left of center. And a lot of the things he stands on is kind of like, no, I won't go there. However, I mentioned Kevork Elnassian, the guy, Syriana analysis. He did a video. Again, he took an article that Jeffrey Sachs wrote and basically turned it into a video and did some, you know, tweaks to it, which I thought was very good. So it's there. And I recommend it. I think it was done really well. Because what I suggest is happening, Jeffrey Sachs is rather left of center. He is apparently, from what I've seen of him, is inclined to, you know, he worked with like Bernie Sanders and stuff of that nature. He liked the Soviet system in a lot of respects, apparently had some interactions, whatever that was. But because he likes he's a socialist. But he also seems to be an advocate of, hey, let's not go to war. And, you know, so I wholeheartedly disagree with them on the socialism aspect. Wholeheartedly. But I do agree with them, hey, let's not go to war. And also, let's not lie in what we do. And what he did in his article, and this video shows that, he shows the lies of the U.S. So just as he showed the fact that, yeah, it looks like the U.S. is the one that blew up Nord Stream, which was done long before the Seymour Hersh article that showed, yes, we blew up Nord Stream. That interview was October, and Seymour Hersh's article came out in February. So, he was saying this before there was solid evidence that, yes, the U.S. blew up Nord Stream. But this particular thing, you know, he points out things that, as he said in the other case, you cannot say publicly if you're trying to be part of the major media. You have to say Russian aggression, the Russian invasion, things of that nature. You have to use those terms. You cannot say, well, you know, the Russian rescue. We couldn't say that. Because from the perspective of a whole lot of people in Donbass, it was a rescue mission, not an invasion. So, but if I say rescue, now that you're making Ukraine look bad and Russia look good. So the thing is, the inflammatory terms. But there are some things that are clear. The war did start in 2014. The shooting, not just simply one side versus the other and various words exchanged or, you know, maybe some nastiness here and there. No, the shooting started in 2014. Again, between 2014 and 2022, before the so-called, you know, the events in February of 2022, something like 14,000 people within the Donbass were killed by the government in Kiev. So, you know, that didn't go over well with, well, for example, a whole lot of people in the Donbass. But we can't say that. And I think he does quite well. He also points out, because it's been talked about over and over again, but I don't know if the U.S. media discusses it, the idea of one of the fundamental issues was there was the repeated, and apparently, you know, it's not just a single, you know, off-the-cuff remark. Apparently, it's a repeated statement by various people within the U.S. You know, we're not going to, you know, with the collapse of the Soviet Union, NATO's not going to move towards Russia. And that's exactly what we did. We lied. Oh, wow, I'm shocked. We continue to move towards Russia. And obviously, having Ukraine become part of NATO was, we're not going to allow that. Because that's way too close. Look at a map, you know, it's way too close. Because Poland is already part of there, and you have... and we have some issues from years back. But anyway, so credibility of the West isn't there when it comes to NATO. And why do we have NATO? To combat who? The Soviet Union, which is no more. So we're bringing old... what we're doing, in a sense, is the Soviet regime grab neighboring countries to form their empire forcibly, very high pressure tactics. So the Soviet Union in 91, again, I was, you know, in the Czechoslovakia during the coup d'etat attempt, and that collapsed. The Soviet Union collapsed peacefully. A bunch of people got into a meeting, and Gorbachev and various other people got together in this big room and signed a document, and that peacefully ended the Soviet Union. Just that simple. It was over. And so all these countries became free. And we have now an economic relationship that is being pursued, just as the Chinese are doing the same with their Belt and Road Initiative and things of that nature. One Belt, One Road. They're pursuing economic relationships which in a lot of respects is a lot stronger than military relationships, and a lot cheaper. And it's enduring to both parties, even though obviously a lot of shenanigans go on with this stuff. But, you know, so, and again, the Asian countries, you know, again, Russia is part of Asia and Europe, but their economy and their stability is growing. Their influence, China and Russia's influence and cooperative agreements with a whole bunch of countries in Africa is growing dramatically, and they are shunning the U.S. We're just, the world is pushing us away. So we see all those things happening because there's that economic bond. But, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed, and their aggressiveness of grabbing other countries, now that's what NATO is doing. We're using, basically, again, the same thing. We're using pressure tactics to go bring in those countries that used to be part of the, you know, the Eastern the bloc of countries. And now they're becoming part of NATO. So what we're doing is effectively Soviet Union 2. Because it's a military. The NATO is a military alliance. It's not an economic one. It's a military alliance, like the Soviet system. The Soviet system collapsed. NATO is going to collapse too. I'm pretty confident of that, considering how the West is collapsing and Asia and Africa are growing. South America apparently is too. There's some turmoil. I'm not too up in that, but apparently there are a lot of places where there is some growth. But anyway, I'm not as up on that. But so you have the lies of the West about NATO expansion. You have the lies promoted that, oh well, you know, that no, there are no Nazis. No Nazis. And again, there's over and over again talking about, you know, so much evidence of the Nazism in Ukraine. It is overwhelming. Then you have the idea that, you know, in 2014, I don't remember when Minsk 1 and Minsk 2, you know, the two agreements signed in Minsk to bring peace, the West ignored it. And the people in Donbass died. So you think Minsk 3, oh, well, you fooled us twice. We'll sign another deal. We have no credibility. The West has no credibility. So I recommend this because what he did is to show the compilation of why we have no credibility and that the objective should be peace. And I really think it's important. And I'm giving you information from a guy where probably 99% of what he says I disagree with. This Jeffrey Sachs. Because I don't buy the socialism idea. Because again, socialism is not freedom. It's like democracy is not freedom. I'm an advocate of freedom. Because I'm a follower of Christ. Anyway, I said I was going to be short. Boy, there goes my credibility, doesn't it? Anyway, I had a wonderful hike with Chris today. I'm so grateful to have that friend. And, you know, I was concerned because our timing didn't work out right because I start with 512 jumping jacks. Then I do make my morning kefir. I do another 128. And then usually shortly thereafter, I do a 256. But Chris arrived, so I didn't do that 256. And I was concerned. I did the hike, and it was kind of like, oh, am I feeling kind of fatigued? So I figured, you know, I need a shower. So before I did that, and I also... There was a couple of ticks on my clothing, so I took off I took it all off and I examined it to make sure, is there anything else left? And then I said, okay, I'm going to take a shower. But before I do that, I did the 256. So within about 5-10 minutes of arriving back at the house after the hike, I did the 256. And what that encourages me, twofold. One is state of health, because I could do that. That encourages me. And one is the stamina. It takes a little commitment, a little stamina to say, you know, I just hiked 7 miles. To hike and then sit down in the car for a while and then get up and do the hit is not easy. But I was convinced I had to do it. And I did it. And it's that stamina, physical, that is actually easy. The stamina, mental, to continue to pursue reconciliation with people who show me hate. And to respond in love. To bless those who persecute you. I'm a follower of the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm striving to love. I make a few mistakes along the way. But I'm striving to love. And I'm striving to reconcile, especially with that woman right there, who I think she's still cute. You know, it really is amazing to me. I see other women all the time, and it's fine. I look at Dorothy Jane, and it's kind of like, that woman is beautiful. That woman is beautiful. She has my heart. There is no one else. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.